Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, January 19th, 2019. This is episode 1558. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by On Deck. Are you a small business owner in need of capital today? Well, On Deck can help. With over $10 billion in loans and an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, On Deck is a lender you can trust. Find out more at ondeck.com/tech guy. And by Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business with customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, I'm sorry. You were hoping for the gardening show. No, it's time to talk about computers. Your worst nightmare, a geek with his own radio show. We talk about computers, the internet. We talk about smartphones. Nowadays, technology is everything, right? Smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, big screen TVs, all that stuff. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. 888-827-5536. Now, that's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still reach me, and it's still free, but you have to use Skype out. I'm sorry. Skype out or something like that to call that that toll free number. 8888 Ask Leo. The website, and I put everything we talk about on the website. The website is techguylabs.com. We even put audio and video from the show after the fact up there. So you can see all 1,558 shows. Holy cow. As we begin we've completed 15 years. We begin our 16th year talking about this stuff. And, you know, what was the big story, I guess, of 2018 was hacks and breaches, right? Data breaches. The biggest data breach to date is Yahoo, 3 billion, which is everybody, 3 billion user records hacked. But I have to give you a heads up. I talk about a lot of different things, but this one is important, and I want you to pay attention. And this comes from a guy named Troy Hunt. He's a security researcher who runs a site I'm going to send you to when you get home called Have I Been Pwned? That's owned, spelled with a P. HaveIBeenPwned.com. Troy said he has found online something he calls Collection Number One. It is the largest trove of leaked data. Now, remember, I said the Yahoo breach was 3 billion, but it was never, for some reason, none of the Yahoo stuff was ever revealed, which makes me think it was a government, probably China, that did the hack. And China's not in it for the money. China's in it for the data. Most of the Chinese hacks, the hacks we know that come from the government of China, don't get released onto the dark web. But this one did. Get ready for this. 772,904,991 unique email addresses. But this is the one that scares me. And these were posted to a hacking forum. 21 million passwords. 21 million unique passwords. These are passwords not encrypted, not hashed, or they were, but they were reverse engineered. People figured out what the passwords were. In raw form, it's a spreadsheet, 2.7 billion rows of email addresses and passwords. It was on Mega, which is the New Zealand-based file sharing service that Kim.com created. It sat in a folder called Collection Number One. 12,000 files, 87 gigabytes. So here's your homework. Troy's site, Have I Been Pwned, is a good site for you to know about and keep probably in your bookmarks. HaveIBeen, and here's the only weird part, PWNED.com. Have I Been, it's what the hacksaws use. So you have to understand the culture of kind of, it's not bad guys exactly. It's just the hacker culture is they like to play with words and say things funny. And in this case, instead of saying owned, they call it pwned. In fact, I've been hearing this word so long now that it seems normal to me, but I realize to most ears it will be what? Yeah, haveibeenpwned.com. Now, when you get there, you can enter in your email address and see if you've been pwned. Almost certainly you have. In other words, that your email address sits somewhere. That's not really a big deal. People can't really do that much with your email address. But up at the top of the page, you'll see on the menu a link called Passwords. This is where you must go. If you have been using a password or a variation of password on a lot of different sites, you need to enter that password in there and see if that password was revealed in one of these breaches, particularly in this collection number one. And the reason is, if you reuse this is why we say don't reuse passwords. If you entered a password in there and you'd only used it on one site, no big deal. You go to that site, you change it, right? But if you've used it on a lot of sites and you don't remember which sites, and we all have, I have a less secure password I use. I mean, I don't care if some hacker gets into my, you know, newspaper subscription account. Well, I guess I might if they move the address. But, you know, there's stuff you subscribe to that you don't really, it's not like you're giving your bank account or your credit card number in there. This is my excuse. It's a bad excuse. I have a couple of passwords. By the way, I checked it and it's in there. Which means now I have to go back and figure out, oh man, what sites did I use that password on? There were lots of them. And change them all one by one. And I want you to do this too. Okay? You can go directly there, haveibeenpwned.com/passwords with a capital P. Or go to haveibeenpwned.com and click passwords. And if you have been a good person, a secure user, and you haven't reused passwords, then it's much less important. In fact, it'd be a pain because you'd have to go through every password you've used. Probably there's hundreds, if not thousands of them, one by one to see if they've been discovered. I would do that with, like, the important ones, your email password, your bank accounts, your Amazon, stuff like that. But the one that is really important is that low security password you use all the time. Or maybe you don't make that distinction and it's too hard to remember passwords, you say. Most people say this. Too hard. I can't remember all those passwords. So I'm going to use my initials and my dog's name and my birthday. There are plenty of people who also say, I'm going to use 1234567. That is, actually, it's 123456 is the most used password. 1234567 is the second most used password. There's a list every year somebody puts out of passwords found in these databases in order of how often they've been used. Password is also a very big password. In fact, if you enter password in there, it'll say pwned. You could try it just to see. Now, if you're a really smart security person, you said, Leo, I hope you said this, I'm not entering my top secret secure password in some website you recommend. You're right, you shouldn't. Except that you can trust Troy. And you should read all the things he says here. He's not saving the password. It's just looking it up in the database. I think it's safe. And remember, you're not saying to what account that password goes or what email address. You're just trying out the password. But if your password is PA$WZRD, it's in there. Yes, I guessed your password. Oh, I'm brilliant. If it's monkey123, it's in there. I admit in the early days of the internet, we're talking mid-90s, I might have used monkey. That's a password. What is it about monkeys? It's one of the most common passwords. Anyway, haveibeenpwned.com. Your assignment today, when you get home, fire up the browser, go to the passwords section. If you want, you can on the front page enter your email address, but I could pretty much promise your email address has already been pwned. And he shows on the front page all the different breaches that he's got the data from that he's collecting to do this search. But if you click that password link at the top and go and you enter in that password that you've used on a lot of sites, and if it's in there, uh-oh, you got some homework. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, coming up in just a little bit. Yay, Scott. He's going to talk about TVs and theater and all that stuff. 888-88-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Kim Schaffer's here, our phone angel. She'll be answering your calls. And we're going to take our first calls of the day right after this. Kim Schaffer.
You're going to pre-record a disclaimer, aren't you?
I think I'm getting to that point. Leo Laporte has no knowledge of the music performed on his program. It is performed without his knowledge or consent.
He is not controlling the buttons.
No, but Big Pee-wee knows what he's talking about.
I want some of what Big Pee-wee's having because...
He was in a good mood this morning, wasn't he?
He did one of those, like, hype rally things, like a football game.
We got to give him a microphone because we can hear him.
The whole listening audience didn't get to hear that, but that was pretty amazing.
he makes his appearances on the podcast version of this show, I think. Yeah. I don't think we mix him out. Do we? Oh, we do.
Yeah,
we don't even hear him in the podcasts.
Just the replay that replays right after.
Yeah, your reason is we don't have the rights to the Commodores music.
Yeah.
So we can't play it on the...
Or anybody else for that matter.
Or anybody else. So people probably don't know what I'm talking about if they're listening to the podcast.
Right.
And I'm not going to enlighten them.
So you'll have to listen.
Mm-mm. You have to listen to the radio if you really want to hear what's going on. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
Did you have a good week?
I did, yeah. Nice soggy week.
Was it soggy? Yeah, we rained.
Wednesday.
We rained, but we're glad we're not back east.
We are.
My mama's in Rhode Island. She's got 2 feet of snow.
Yeah, I guess I'll take the rain then.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm living out here. I'd have to come over and shovel it. Fortunately, grandkids are next door, so they come over and shovel for her, which is nice.
Very good.
So... do we have?
We have.
I would like to just sit and talk to you for the rest of the show.
That would
be
great. But I don't know if that would help.
No, people. we got to help people. We got to. That's my mission.
Well, I had a caller, and he dropped, unfortunately. But he had a question that he didn't think you've ever received before. So I was really looking.
Oh, you can ask. Well, just ask it. Do you know what it is?
So he basically said, "I work out a lot. I've got an iPhone or iPod that's got 3,800 songs on it.
Nice.
I don't want to maybe listen to the entire song, but I want to hear like 15 or 20 second snippets. Is there anything
interesting.
You know of that could...
That's so funny. That's how my kids, when they were in high school, that's how they listened to music.
Right?
Abby couldn't listen to a whole song.
It's like, beep, next,
yeah, she.
Beep.
It was so frustrating. I'd be sitting in the car. She'd have control of the iPod. She'd listen for a little bit and then skip to the next one.
Yeah.
I said, Abby, I want to hear a whole song. She said, no, no. I just want to hear 15 seconds.
Yeah, so that's what he wants to do, and he wants to know if there's any function on the iPhone or iPod or what iTunes that will do that.
That's a great question. He's right. I've never gotten that question.
Yeah, I haven't heard it.
I wonder if you could make the only thing. No, there is no function on the iPhone
or
iPod.
You have to do it yourself, probably.
And I'm wondering, you know, there is a very powerful feature on iOS 12 that I don't know if people really delve into much. But they ought to, called Shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
You can download the app. It's an Apple app called Shortcuts. Isn't automatically on the phone. And Siri will do it too. And I wonder, it'd be a really interesting shortcut to play a song, set a timer. When the timer elapses, skip. I bet you could do that in a shortcut.
But he would have to do that to all 3,800 songs.
No.
No?
You just, well, maybe. I don't know. See, I'm just guessing here.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about the capabilities of the shortcuts, which really automates apps on your smartphone or your iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to be an iPod that runs apps, not just like a classic.
Right.
But if you could download Shortcuts and you have iOS 12... I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just thinking in my head, the way shortcuts work is you kind of daisy chain tasks that are enabled by different apps. So you can, it's actually a really powerful way of automating your iPhone. As long as Apple Music or some music program has a shortcut compatible task that lets you play a playlist, which I would be shocked if they didn't, then the trick would be start the playlist, wait 30 seconds, and then skip, which is another task that's available. Skip. I'm going to write that, and I will be back tomorrow.
With an answer for Travis.
Well, if I can figure it out, I'll post it on the website. I bet you, and I bet you somebody listening can do that too. This is actually a great excuse to delve into shortcuts, which is a very powerful feature of
iOS 12. I've never heard of it, and I'll have to look
it up. No, you know, Apple's funny. They give people this power, but then they don't really mention it again. And it really is good. You know, you could, of course, if you have headphones that have a skip. I have these Aftershocks. They're great workout headphones, and they have a button.
Oh, you just go deep.
And if you tap the button twice, it skips to the next song. So something like that would do it. But that's a pain.
Yeah.
You're lifting weights.
Yeah, I don't. I've gotten weights in my hands.
So who is that?
His name was Travis.
Thank you, Travis. But who should I take next?
How about John in L.A.?
Thank you, Kim.
If you have time.
I have time. Hello, John. Leo. Hey, tech guy. Are you there, John?
Yes, I am, Leo.
All right. Turn down that radio or whatever it is that's going on. Because you'll get mightily confused hearing what I said 40 seconds ago.
All right. Yes, I'm a little confused. So, hey, Leo, great to talk to you. I've been listening to your show and first time to call.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. My question is this. I'm replacing my old computer, and I bought a refurbished one. I don't think it has Office Suite software installed.
No, a lot of people think that Office comes with Windows. It does not. It's a separate purchase.
Oh, I see. So
what I would recommend is this, and what Microsoft would recommend, there's a free Office that's not Microsoft Office, but it's compatible, called Libre, or Libre Office. So if you Google that, you can download that, and that's absolutely free. It's an open source project, and it does do pretty much everything Office does. It's a slightly clunkier, but it's free. And then if you want the real Microsoft Office... And I should mention that LibreOffice will both read and write standard Office doc files. So there's, you know, it's compatible, including it has a word processor, but it also has a spreadsheet and a kind of a PowerPoint-like slide program. So it does all the things that Microsoft Office does. I don't know if it comes with email, but the same people who do it also, of course, make email programs like Thunderbird. Now, if you want Microsoft Office, you have a choice of buying it outright, which is very expensive, and they still sell it that way. You can go to a store and buy it, and it's like $800. Forget about that. Or subscribe. And if you go to products.office.com, you can see the subscription choices. $100 a year for Office Home. So what is that, $7 or $8 a month? That's not too bad, $8 a month. Office 365 Personal is even less. You pay a monthly or yearly fee. I like doing that. That's what I do. If you really need Office, I think that's the most affordable solution. And I believe there's been rumors that Microsoft is going to do something similar to Office 365 with Windows and Office this year. There have been rumors. So watch for that, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Scott Wilkinson, coming up next. Our show today brought to you, our podcast today, we have podcast advertisers, woo! Brought to you by On Deck. This is one for small business owners. And as a small business owner, I appreciate that it happens all the time. You need cash, right? This is very common, you know? You get a rush of orders, you need to manufacture them, but you're not going to get paid for 30, 60, or 90 days. There's a cash flow crunch. There's no shame. That's why On Deck's there. On Deck is 100% committed to small business owners with fast, easy, tailored financing. You get funding as fast as 24 hours because sometimes, you know, you got to make payroll, right? Term loans up to $500,000, lines of credit up to $100,000, and oh, you'll love this. They don't require business collateral, and it won't impact your personal credit. That's what I'm looking for. The application process is easy. You can do it online or by phone. Get approved in minutes. On Deck is actually famous for their customer service. U.S.-based loan specialists who speak your language, they understand, and they're there to help. A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. They've lent over $10 billion to over 80,000 small business owners. Trustpilot, another great place to get reviews. 9.8 out of 10 rating. That's practically perfect in every way. OnDeck is the secure financing service that business owners everywhere can truly rely on. So if, like me, you're a small business owner and you need access to capital, go to ondeck.com/techguy right now. By the way, because you're listening to the show, if you go to ondeck.com/techguy, they'll give you a free, no-pressure consultation with one of their U.S.-based loan specialists. Purely informational, but very helpful. Just, you got to at least know what the options are. Apply online, apply by phone, get approved in minutes, great rates. Go to ondeck.com/techguy, and it's a lot better than doing what a lot of us do, which is just go to the credit card. Don't do that. No. Go to ondeck.com/techguy for your free consultation now. On Deck, ready and waiting for you. Lo and behold, he appears magically. Scott Wilkinson. He is our theater guru, joins us each week. Home theater geek. He was at CES, the show formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show. What else am I going to say? Right. It's like Prince.
Yeah, what else can you say? Yeah. Exactly.
What else can you say? They don't want you to call it that. It's been 2 weeks now. And your feet have recovered?
One week. It's been 1 week.
Okay. Yeah. Your feet are better?
My feet have recovered. Yeah.
And last week we talked about the TVs you saw there, but it's also an audio show.
Well, yes, to some degree. One of the biggest pieces of news coming out of the show, it must have been that a lot of the high-end audio was at the Venetian Hotel. It wasn't in the convention center.
No.
It was down the street.
Although we always had our big TWIT booth in the South Hall right next to the Earthquake
subwoofers.
Subwoofers. So we'd be talking, doing the show, and every once in a while you're...
And they're still there, and there are some audio companies in the South Hall, certainly. Sennheiser's there, Audio Technica is there, and they all had, new products to show. But, all of us journalists always went over to the Venetian for at least a day, because there were three or four floors of audio over there. This year, there was less than one floor. There was like one wing.
Why is that? I mean, surely audio isn't going away, or maybe it is.
No, I don't think it is. I think the audio companies have decided to go to the regional audio shows and focus their attention on those, like Expona, like Rocky Mountain Audio Fest in Denver.
Frankly, this is why shows like CES puzzle me, because the big companies stopped going to CES, Apple, Microsoft.
Well,
Because honestly, they can get enough attention for their products on their own, and they don't. Why announce something when everybody else is announcing something? I guess if you're a tiny little company, there's an advantage because the press is there. But there's 180,000 people.
Yeah,
it's hard to rise above the noise, frankly.
Well, it's true. It's true. On the other hand, journalists like me have specific beats. So I look for video and audio products.
That makes sense,
And I know there are plenty of others that do the same.
Well, and it's nice for you because you can go one place and see everything, all the new stuff for this year. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I did hear some really cool stuff in the Venetian. There were a few companies still there. PSB was there, Paul Barton's company, and he had some new headphones that sounded wonderful. And some new speakers that sounded really incredible. ELAC, Andrew Jones is the designer.
That's
there.
That's the ones I want. I want to get a set of ELAC.
You want to get a set of ELAC, you do.
The surround sounds with the Atmos speakers.
Phenomenal speakers. And a phenomenal deal, a phenomenal value. I mean, they really make speakers. He designs speakers that they sell for very reasonable prices.
And but they're good. But they're really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
I mean, Andrew Jones, man, he's one of the best speaker designers in the world.
Oh, he's legendary.
He's legendary.
Yeah.
So those were excellent, too. One thing I really wanted to mention, though, was something I found in the Sony booth. Now, Sony is a big company that comes every year, and they have a huge booth.
CES is big for Sony. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's huge.
They have the booth in the back.
They do, up back in the back of Central Hall.
You walk all the way down, 14 miles, and then you're at the Sony booth.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they had something audio that I thought was pretty cool. Not unique, but cool. They call it 360 reality audio. And what it is really is virtualization, headphone virtualization. Now, we've heard this before, and what that means is inside your headphones, you get the impression that you're listening to speakers that are outside of your head. Normally, you're listening to headphones and you hear the sound and it sounds like it's all in your head. But with virtualization systems, it sounds like it's outside your head. And Sony has a new system that does exactly that. And what was cool was they had in the demo room a 13.2 speaker system. Yeah. So they had five speakers around at ear level, two subwoofers, and five speakers around above your head. And they played a little bit of music on that, and it sounded really great. Then they stuck little microphones inside. There were six people, and they put these little microphones in each of our ears, and they played some test tones. After which, they put on the headphones, and the system had automatically and immediately modeled the exact way in which sound diffracts around my head as compared to the guy next to me, as compared to the guy in front of me. And they were all different. And so then they put on the headphones. They said, okay, listen to the same music again. And we did, and it sounded all the world like music was coming from those same speakers we had just heard a moment ago. It was really quite remarkable. And Sony, with this system, is targeting music. They specifically, during their press conference, they had Pharrell Williams come on.
Oh, I love Pharrell.
And he's great, and he is way behind this. They demoed it for him, and they brought him to Tokyo, and they showed him all the stuff, and he said, oh yeah, I want to mix my music in this. And then later during the demo, we heard a piece by, Olivia Noel, that had been remixed for this system. And I asked the question, well, people have tried multi-channel music before, and it never really took off. What makes them think this is going to be any different? And the answer is headphones. Because who's going to put 13.2 speakers in their room to listen to music? Nobody.
Yeah, nobody.
Nobody's going to do that.
No, nobody going to do that. Come on,
everybody's
man.
Everybody's going to listen to headphones. Everybody does listen to headphones.
Good headphones are, I think, a requisite for somebody who likes to listen to great music. Because at least compared to buying a whole set of speakers, that expensive, mm-hmm. right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, they can be. You can spend $50,000 on a pair headphones.
But a good pair of...
generally speaking, yeah, they're under $1,000. Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And if you can get this really spacious feeling of music sort of all around you while wearing headphones, that's a wonderful thing. It's really a wonderful thing. They're focusing on headphones and streaming. And so they're working with streaming providers like Tidal and Spotify, Deezer. Yeah, exactly. And getting them to encode this music, which needs to be remixed into multi-channel. It's an object-based system, much like Dolby Atmos. So you don't have to have a specific speaker setup. They move sounds around in a three-dimensional sound field, and they have this tool that producers can use to do that. It was very interesting, very effective, and I really hope to see them succeed and artists to pick this up and mix their music that way. Because I've always been a big fan of multi-channel music.
Yeah.
I really like
it. Yeah. Although, what format do you buy it on? I guess nowadays you can download
it? It's streaming. Yeah, it's downloaded or stream.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's not on a disc
or anything
like
that. Because the Super CD and the...
Super Audio CD, SACD, and DVD audio.
Right?
Yeah, they're all gone. Yeah. Except for some audiophiles who still use them. But no, this is all downloaded and streamed.
Yeah.
So it seems to me to be a pretty interesting new approach to multi-channel music.
Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek. And now you know why. If you want to spend money, talk to Scott.
That's right.
Thank you, Scott.
We're
going to take a break. Scott will be back next week. We will be back with your calls. Right after this, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So it looks like if I were to purchase an ELAC system, for some reason the F6 and the B6, those are all out of stock. Looks like they're all, but these are the, but this is the, what do you call it? This is the Debut 2.0. That's the one to get, right?
Well, the Debut, as I recall, is kind of the budget oriented. Let me look.
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to go budget.
Well.
What should I get?
I will tell you, I will hook you up with those guys.
Well, you already did. In fact, I never responded to the email, and I should respond. So the Adante, the Cinema.
Adante, yes. The Adante is a phenomenal speaker. Phenomenal.
Oh, boy, I'm going to see how much this is going to set me back. Oh, yeah. Look at the size of that. but honestly, I'm sure this is way out of my league.
Well, if you want to go a little less than that, but still.
I was looking at the Debuts. Those are too cheap, huh?
Well, I would if I were you, I would look at the Unify.
Unify.
Yep.
Okay. I think that's what you told me last time.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, Unify. Okay.
The Unify is a phenomenal value. Just beautiful.
Okay. There's the towers. But they don't have Atmos in this one. So do you get
You get a separate Atmos sitting on top.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I was actually when I looked at the these are a little more pricey. This is a little bit more pricey.
A little more pricey than you're looking for. Hey, the Debuts ain't bad. There's no question about it.
Remember, I'm an old man, and I'm upgrading. True. I'm upgrading from. I have what do I have? I have a Parian, and I have Etymotic. Not Etymotic. Emotiva.
Emotiva. Mm-hmm. Those are fine.
Two, you know, nice, small, low, you know, U.S. companies that make decent speakers.
Yep.
But this would be an upgrade from that though, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean the Emotiva is probably the what were the other ones? Now I've forgotten already.
Aperian,
right. Those are very good. I would have a hard time saying get rid of those.
Have the Aperian in the living room with the 100-inch TV.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of space to fill, as you know. And then in my office, I have the Emotivas.
So let's see.
Which should I replace?
I'd have to know the model numbers of both of them, actually.
Yeah.
But if you send me the model numbers, I'll give you a better recommendation of which ones to replace. But
and ELAC, according to Subaru, is introducing its Carina speakers. Is that an Ocarina?
Now I'm not sure where these all fall. I mean, I know Debut is the entry level.
Yeah.
Unify is a step up from
that. That's the one you like. The Unify is not outrageously expensive.
Not outrageous. The Adantes are the step up from that, I believe. Let's see. How much are the Adantes?
If you have to ask, Scott.
You can't afford them. So the AS61, they have a nice, simple numbering system. I'm going to write an article someday about model numbering because it's crazy,
isn't it?
It's really weird. I did that with synthesizers once, and it was well accepted.
So I need to get a sub. Which sub?
Oh, you any of the subs. The Adante series
doesn't really matter, does it?
It doesn't really matter terribly much. I mean, you want to get the large...
Boom, boom, boom.
And actually, tell you the truth, what you really want is the the S12 EQ. I'll tell you that. I know exactly.
Can you hang on to the top?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I just used up your entire mid-segment.
That's fine.
Thank you.
No problem.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, digging a little Sir Elton John. Thank you, Big Pee Wee. I saw Elton John last night. He's doing his farewell tour. He's giving up touring, 71. I understand why. But it was kind of a bittersweet concert. At the end, he plays Goodbye Yellow Brick Road and ascends to the heavens. He's got a little lift. He goes up and he waves. Bye, Elton. Bye. Now, when he says goodbye, though, it's a long goodbye because he's going to do this farewell tour for 3 years. And then in a couple, you know, he started in September. He'll be going through, what is that, September 2018, 2019, 2020. He'll be going through 2021. Yeah. That's the way to give a farewell tour. 8888 Ask Leo, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rich on the line from West Palm Beach. Hello, Rich.
Yeah, hey, Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. The bumper music is hysterical that you mentioned that at the start of the program, because I always listen to your podcast. I've been listening for 10 years.
You've never heard it.
And I never can figure out, you'll say, who the artist is. And the only time I figured it out was with the Giz Whiz. You said it was Vicky Sue Robinson, and I go, disco.
Turn the beat around.
But we never hear the music. I guess
forget that. Yeah, that's kind of mean of me to refer to it. The radio audience hears it, but the podcast audience, for rights reasons, we're not allowed to put the music
on. Yes, no, I understand that. But it's funny, because you never hear that, but we always hear you talk about it. But
like, thank you for reminding me. I'll stop doing that. Or at least I'll identify it.
The song was.
I could do clues, and then it'd be kind of a fun game.
That's a great idea. And then in the break, you can say what the song was, and those of us listening to the podcast can play the game along with you.
That's a good idea.
Anyway, here's my problem. I'm a longtime Mac user. I started using Quicken in 1994 and have been using it continually for 25 years.
Wow.
And
what is it about, you know, I hear from people all the time who use Quicken. We got a call the other day from somebody who uses Microsoft Money, which Quicken killed about 20 years ago. And I just, why is it that people still use it?
Let me explain, because, the one that they stopped updating it, they kept updating it until 2007, and the Quicken that I'm using now is Quicken 2007. I mean, that's actually the title of the program.
The good news is that Intuit sold Quicken, and the new company has been keeping it up to date.
Yes, and it worked fine right through Sierra. And then I started having problems with it with Sierra.
Right.
And so what I was able to do is I bought a MacBook Air that was reconditioned from Apple. And with the help of an Apple person through AppleCare, they were able to let me return to Sierra. And everything works on Sierra. So I took that MacBook Air, and it's got 128 gig SSD drive, and all I've got on it is Quicken. And I've heard you talk about,
Let me just ask real quickly. You don't want to upgrade to the new Quicken. You want to stay with 2007.
For me, it's too complicated. They put so many features on it. All I want is I've got my checking account, my money market accounts, my credit cards, and I put all of that information in manually, and then I'm able to reconcile it. But I've got 25 years.
Yeah, you don't want to lose
that.
Yeah.
And it's very comfortable. So here's my question. like I said, I've only got Quicken on this MacBook Air.
It's a dedicated Quicken machine.
That's my question. Will this work? I keep it in my den. I don't use it for anything else. It's got like 85 gig available on the 128 gig SSD drive. I always plug it in. I don't run it off the battery. My question is, how long do you think it'll last?
Well, the SSD is going to last a good long time. In my opinion, although you can't have SSD failures, and when they fail outright. But in my opinion, they last longer than any moving part would, like a spinning hard drive. The battery will be the first to go, but as you say, you don't care because you're plugging it in. I don't know. You should be able to get another 10, 15 years out of it, I would think.
That would be great. And I do back it up to a separate SSD drive.
That's a good idea because then at least you have the data. And if the drive failed, you could take it in and get a new drive put in. That's not a big deal. At some point, Apple will say, we don't have drives for this machine anymore. But by the way, that machine will work perfectly well off an external drive as well. You know that, right?
Yes. Well, I've still got the original program on the, the DVD, and I back up everything up.
Yeah, and so if you had to, if the internal drive died, you could boot up to an external drive and still run it, still continue to use it. So it's good that you're backing it up. I see no reason why that would fail. The solid-state parts aren't going to fail. The hard drive and the battery will be the only things that'll fail. And as long as you take good care of it, 15 years, it'll last forever. Although, somebody in the chat room pointed out, after 15 years, it does become a religious artifact. But well, that's fine.
Can I ask you one quick question that's related to that?
Yeah.
I've got the same. I've got a MacBook Pro as well. I'm an amateur television guy. I mean, I'm just, it's really lots of home movies, but I've been doing it for 15 years.
Fun. And that's a great hobby.
And it is fun. And Final Cut Pro works great. Well, I just got a notice, which I'm sure a lot of other people got. They're changing from, and I'm not a geek, so I don't know, from 32-bit to 64-bit.
Yeah, this is going to be a problem going forward. All of the Mac operating systems require 64-bit software next version. So
they say your legacy media, the things that I've got on, I've got drives all over the place.
Those will all still
work. Not going to be able to be accessed.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. That would be nutty. But maybe, I mean, if Apple said it, then, you know, the thing is not to upgrade to the new operating system.
Well, that's my question. I've got a MacBook Pro.
Yeah, don't ever upgrade. You're
Okay, that's exactly what I was going to. Can I do the same thing with my MacBook Pro and Final Cut that I'm doing with my MacBook?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the good news is Apple continues to do security patches for older versions of the operating system. I suppose at some point they'll stop doing that as well. But that's a secure machine. I wouldn't worry too much about it. How are you on High Sierra?
No, I'm on Mojave now.
All right. Stay at Mojave. That's the last 32-bit compatible version. Just stay. Don't move. And they won't force you to move either.
That's perfect. That's you've given me the you've given me the answer that I was hoping for.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see more and more people doing this. An antiquarian. You like the way it used to be, and why change it? And, you know, there is a lot in the tech industry of change for change's sake. You know, you don't need to give Quicken new features. You don't need to give Office new features. You don't need to give Word or you don't need to give Windows new features. You don't need to give Mac. It's fine. It works. But
and you know,
people wouldn't buy new stuff if you didn't upgrade it.
If Quicken came out and said, we're going to make this work on Mojave, I would pay another $39 to keep.
No, they'll never make Quicken 2007 work on Mojave. I'm pretty sure of that. Intuit's abandoned Quicken.
Thank you very much, Leo. Yeah. That's great information.
Yeah, yeah. These things are, this is in a way the tragedy of all of this. It's the same with your smartphone. That's never going to break. These aren't going to wear out. This is not an automobile. These will last forever. Solid state parts don't go bad. They don't rust. They don't corrode. They don't wear out. They go obsolete. And a lot of that, in my opinion, obsolescence is created by the companies that, you know, want to sell you new products. That's as simple as it is. If you want to use new software, you'll have to get new operating systems or new hardware. But if you don't care, if you've got the program you want exactly as you want it, you're good. You're golden. Just don't upgrade the operating system. Our show today, I think we're going to get this call a lot more, to be honest with you. Antiquarians. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Here I is.
Let me move Elac out of the way. Put a big clock in there. There you go.
Thank you. Look at that. Very nice. Very nice.
Very nice. Very nice.
Uh-oh. Patterson says Hair wasn't the best musical ever. I'm going with Cats in German.
Oh, no, no.
Rent. Hair was great.
Wait a minute. What are we talking about? Great. Hamilton. Better than anything.
Oh, yeah, true, true.
That's.
I haven't seen it. You've seen Hamilton. Oh,
I've seen it twice.
See Hamilton.
But I saw it with the original cast. Man, you got to go to Puerto Rico to see it.
Now you got to do that. Go to Puerto Rico. But I would love to see Hamilton. I wouldn't be surprised if I thought that was the best musical ever.
Oh, you will.
I mean,
you will.
It sounds so phenomenal.
Oh, you will. It's But Rent was before Hamilton. Also, I mean,
Rent was gorgeous.
A break. Yeah. What is it? A style breaker or
It
was a new. So I've seen many Broadway musicals, and Hamilton without a doubt. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I saw Hair when it first came out in like 1971. Or 70, 1970,
that's
I guess
cool.
It was.
See, I didn't see Hair when it came
out. I saw it at the Aquarius Theater in Hollywood, where
this
it started.
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius.
Yes, exactly. And that was mighty cool. I mean, you know, I was a high schooler.
Yeah, and there was nudity.
And there was nudity. Ooh.
Ooh. All yours, my friend.
Thank you so much. We're getting some suggestions for you in the chat room.
Oh,
Reb 3941 is saying to go with in-ceiling Atmos speakers instead of up-firing. And it depends on your room. If you're going to be in your main big room.
I have to there. But I would put the Atmos in my office.
In your office.
Where it has a fairly low ceiling.
And flat, right?
Yep.
And fairly reflective.
Yep.
It doesn't have like acoustic tiles on it or popcorn ceiling.
Please, excuse me.
Then, yes, up-firing should be fine.
I mean, I guess I could put them in the ceiling. I guess that's not that hard.
I don't think you really. I mean, are in ceilings actually better? Ultimately, I would say probably so.
Of course, yeah,
But in ceilings, but up firing with the right kind of ceiling should work just fine.
Hmm.
I don't have any problem with that. Now, Lawn Dog is saying get two subwoofers, and I agree with him on that.
And even in that small of a room, it's only about 15 feet square, really?
Well, if it's square, if you get two
subwoofers. Well, it has a bay window, so it's not completely square.
Yeah, yeah. Still, you don't have to play them loud.
The nice thing is I have no neighbors.
right. I remember, yeah, you've got some good space.
I could rumble that sucker.
yeah. I don't think you need to. The point of having two subwoofers or even more is to even out the room modes so that some seats, the bass is really out there, and in some seats,
it's such a small room, everybody. I mean, there's only two people sitting together.
Yeah, it probably isn't that as big a deal. Yeah. I mean, it would improve the bass, no question.
Really?
Yeah, it would. It would. Just right. because of the physics of the situation.
Okay.
You know, it's not necessary, but it would improve the response, the in-room response of the in the bass. It just would. There's just no two ways about it. It's physics. You cannot change the laws of physics.
Well, maybe I will.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind. I love music, and I love my OLED TV. It'd be nice to have a real cinema experience in there.
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, getting back to the ELAC subs, the sub 3070 looks really good. It goes down to like 18 hertz, which is well below what you can hear. I really have liked for a long time the S12 EQ, which the specs say go down to 25 hertz. So it's not quite to the bottom of the human hearing range, but it's not bad. And it has, I think the newer ones have this too. It has an app in your phone that lets you dial it in and, in fact, do some automatic calibration. So in that case, a single sub would probably be okay. I mean, again, two would be better. But with this app that you can automatically adjust the subwoofer according to your room is really a good thing. I think they were very smart in what they did with that. So anyway, that's what I feel about that. Let's see. Mike B says Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat is the best. I never saw that musical. I never even saw the movie if they had it or whatever. Let's see. Oh, Dr. Mom Grandma saw, Hair, it looks like, in the original. Lumpy, yes, LG is discounting 2018 OLEDs for Super Bowl season. I will be talking about that extensively next week. So let me hold off on that till next week. Hey, Loquacious, good to see you again, as always. Compter phone, what is similar to the Revel speakers but costs a bit less? That's hard to say. Revel.
Yeah, what's similar to the best speakers in the world?
yeah,
but exactly. Doesn't cost $50,000. What would be good for that?
Well, I have to go back to ELAC, I'm afraid.
I'm going to get these ELACs. You've convinced me now.
Yeah. Or PSB. PSB makes some really good speakers. Really good. In fact, the newest ones I heard that were modest floor standers. I don't remember the cost. Let me see if I can figure that out. If I have that in my notes that I can find really easy. Yeah, here we go. The T20s, $600 a pair. These are the new Alpha series in PSB. And I heard the T20s, which are very modest towers, for $600 a pair. They're down 3 dB at 28 hertz. Jeez, in that room, which is amazing. And they were almost a little overbalanced in the bass. I would probably EQ that bass down a little bit, especially if I had a subwoofer, which I still would use even for all of that. But they sounded amazing. I don't know when they're going to be available, but they're really something. So, yes, Compter phone, similar to Revel, but less. And Compter phone, yes, SVS subwoofers, also excellent. Excellent subwoofers, hard to beat, in fact. So that, you know, I'm a pretty big proponent of using the same brand and even the same line of speakers for your main surround and even Atmos speakers. But the subwoofer is somewhat less important in that regard. I mean, it's really important.
But somewhat less.
In that regard.
Yeah.
So you could get SVS subs with ELAC speakers if you wanted. I wouldn't see that.
Scott, have a wonderful week.
Thank you. I will look forward to seeing you next week when we will talk Super Bowl TV deals.
Yeah, baby.
Woohoo.
All right.
Thank you. We don't even know who's going to be in the game, do we?
Not yet. We're watching. We're watching today and tomorrow. Finding out. We'll find out. We got playoffs for the next few weeks. See you, Scott.
See ya.
I can tell he's really into sport ball, huh? Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, it's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, you know, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is my phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Let's talk high tech. Website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign up, no cost. Love to hear from you. Techguylabs.com. It's a great place to find stuff that you hear on the show. You don't have to write anything down. We're writing it all down for you. But also to leave your comments if you have. No need to shout at the radio. If you have any thoughts, something Leo said was all wrong. No, don't suffer in silence. Go to techguylabs.com and comment. We divide the page up into shows, and each show up into hours, and each hour up into questions. Should be able to find that exact question and answer it right there. Penny in Seal Beach, California is next. Hi, Penny.
Hi there. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am well. And how are you?
Doing fine, thank you. I've got a couple of questions here. One is, I had installed a security system. I'm not sure if I can say the name or not.
You can always say the name.
Okay, it was WebRoot, and it is asking me, because it's expired, to either renew or uninstall.
Uninstall.
Okay, so when I want to I was afraid of uninstalling it because I didn't know if it was going to mess up something, because I've heard people calling the
Yeah, yeah. So antiviruses, I now have to explain all of my thinking around this because a lot, and by the way, it's not a bad thing to have an antivirus. If you really feel like you need extra help, I certainly would install it on a teenager's computer. But you should understand that, and WebRoot, of all the antiviruses, I like the ones like WebRoot that have an online component because they can keep up to date faster. So there is an advantage to using WebRoot. There are a few others that do the same kind of thing. And that solves one of the complaints I have about antiviruses, which is hard for them to keep up to date. Most of the attacks you're going to face are so new that the antivirus doesn't know about them. On average, antiviruses only capture about half of the attacks. So that's part of the problem, is you get this false sense of confidence. Now, half is better than none, but there's another problem, which is, and you're kind of alluding to it a little bit, which is antiviruses hook deep within the operating system. And in order to do that, they actually put you at risk. Because if there's a flaw in the antivirus, and this has happened to some of the big name antiviruses, a bad guy can use that to attack you, can get in through the antivirus and get into a lower level than he could if it were just a user level application. And that's why it's hard to remove. There's two reasons it's hard to remove. One, because it's hooked so deep in the operating system. Two, because they don't want to be easy to remove. Otherwise, the viruses would just remove them. The reason I don't recommend antiviruses if you have Windows 10 is it comes with – Microsoft has a very capable security system, including an antivirus that comes with Windows 10. So you don't really need another one.
Okay, so I can uninstall it and I shouldn't have any...
Well, I would try uninstalling it, but you may, in many cases with the antivirus, you also would go to the site, the company's site, and see if they have a standalone removal tool. They often do, because you need another app to kind of smartly remove all of the junk.
Okay, standalone removal tool.
Yeah.
Okay.
You probably won't. I haven't ever uninstalled Webroot, so I don't know. This is the case with Symantec antivirus, Norton antivirus, McAfee antivirus. In those cases, they do have a separate removal tool specifically for this reason.
Okay. My other question is, I would like to remove text messages from my iPhone and save them. I don't know how to do that. I bought an iXpand flash drive.
Yeah.
And it doesn't save text messages.
No, because they're kind of in a different spot. So the easiest way to do this is... if you have a Macintosh.
I don't.
Yeah. The way Apple Messages works is it can, if you turn it on, and you have to turn this on, it's a switch in your iPhone, store it in the cloud, store those messages in the cloud, which means they're accessible to your computer. In fact, you may not have to have a Mac. You may be able to just log into iCloud and see those messages.
I can't. I don't even know where to start with this one. I'm tied in with someone else's phone.
Ah.
And I can't get untangled. Taking everything off.
I understand.
Starting fresh, and that's what I'm trying to do is I want to get it off so I can empty everything on the phone.
In order to... So, first of all, if it's tied to his iCloud account, you'll need to get him to release it. Apple has a very strict activation lock to keep people from stealing iPhones, which was a big problem. So in order to reuse an iPhone, you have to get the original owner to release it. And usually that means simply removing it from Find My iPhone in the cloud. But you have to basically turn off your iCloud, and then it can be reused. So the whole idea is that only the original owner can hand over an iPhone. If you found it on the street or somebody stole it and gave it to you, you could never use it because the original owner hadn't deactivated it.
Right. Well, this phone I purchased, but what happened was is there was the phone before this that was given to me by this person, and when I went to have them download onto my new phone...
It activated your phone under his account.
Yep, somehow. Somehow we got...
No, that's the way it happens. No, that's how it works. It assumes he was upgrading his phone, and you got an up... So this is important that you not... Now, if you have his iCloud login, you can do that. I'm making it a his. It could be a her. I'm just assuming. But if you had that person's iCloud login, you could log in, take it off Find My iPhone, and then erase it. Why do you want to say? Oh, because you have your messages on there.
Yes, and I wanted to restore my phone back to factory so that I can have all of this stuff.
You would lose all those messages. Those messages are tied to his iCloud account, which incidentally means he can see them. Just want you to know that.
Yeah, that's okay. It's not a big, mainly business.
I get it. Okay.
So I need to have him release his iCloud account.
You don't have the login?
No, I can probably get it, but I would prefer he do it.
Yeah, just say turn. Yeah. I think it's simply enough just to remove it from Find My iPhone. And then it'll ask several times for him to log into iCloud. It's very, it's an elaborate procedure. Once he does that, you can wipe your phone. Now, there are ways to get your messages off the iPhone without having access to the iCloud account, I believe. But it needs third-party software. Now, you already have this hardware thing, that's not seeing it, so that's not sufficient. There's a company that makes software to do this. Let me just see, though, if you need special software. I'm looking... it looks like you might be able to save them out.
There is a one that was done for me, iBackup Extractor. But when I go to access it now, I have to either continue running the Backup Extractor demo or I have to go in and purchase it. Now, when the person did...
No, yeah, that's so annoying. I hate it when they do that. That was just basically...
She said it was free.
Yeah, it's free until you want to use it. Yeah, I hate that. That drove me nuts. Go to ECAMM, ECAMM.com. They have a program called PhoneView. You may have to pay for it. It's $30, though.
Okay.
PhoneView lets you save everything. And I don't think you need to try the free version to make sure, but I don't think you need to be able to log into the iCloud account to do that. It just presumes if you can attach your phone to your computer, you can, because it runs on a computer. Oh, you don't have a Mac, though.
No, but I have a PC, and that was living.
Yeah, this don't work on a PC. There must be a Windows program that will do this. I'm going to have to do some research. So keep listening. I do have to take a break right now. And by the way, as regards Webroot, if there are there's a page on Webroot on how to uninstall it. They don't need special software, but I will put a link to that in the show notes, techguylabs.com. And as an extra bonus, special, Penny, I will put in there, we will find, if we don't find it before the show's over, software to let you use Windows to copy your iPhone messages. Apple increasingly wants you to use a Macintosh. This is Apple's whole plan for the world. If you would just all use Apple software, the world would be a better place. Why would you want to use Windows? That's their business model. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little timeout. Then we will take more of your calls in just a bit. Stay right here. iMazing.com apparently is a Windows, iMazing.com. Is it a Windows manager, iPhone? Yeah, they have, so this sounds like something, Penny, you could use, iMazing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. So Dr. Mom in the chat room, Dr. Mom Grandma now in the chat room, passed along one app from a company I've never tried and never heard of, but hey, it's worth looking at, Penny, called iMazing at iMazing.com. Maybe there's a free download, which would be the, you know, it works, but I'm not going to give it to you unless you pay for it thing. And it does work on Windows. It is $45, Mac or PC. And they say it'll get your music, your messages, your files, and your data off the phone. And I, you know, the nice thing about these programs, I'm thinking, and again, I would do the free download on anything you try, is I'm thinking you don't have to have iCloud login for it. But who knows what Apple enforces? You know how Apple is. They may enforce that, in which case you'd have to get the cooperation of the original account holder. Sam, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for hanging on, Sam.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Again.
Well, it's nice to have you on again. Welcome.
I took three laptop computers down to Windows Store and had them upgraded to Windows 10.
Yeah?
Two were HPs, and the other one was the Soba, or T-Soba, whatever you called it. But anyway, yeah. The HP one, they said, hey, we can't get your touchpad to work. I said, oh, really? I said, it was working when I brought it in here.
You broke it, you nitwit.
But they couldn't get it to work, and I'm over here trying to use it, then it doesn't do anything. I try to go online and
so
see if I could find the problem.
In theory, when you install Windows, when Microsoft what you're missing is what's called a driver. It's a little bit of software that talks to the hardware, and it's usually written by the hardware manufacturer, and this is the key to all that. And it's designed to talk to the hardware and then tell Windows what it needs to know. It's a translator. It's an intermediary between Windows and a piece of hardware. They call them drivers. And you absolutely need a driver for a touchpad. Normally, when you install Windows 10, it does something called plug and play. Microsoft's name, not mine, although that's pretty catchy. Plug and play, in theory, looks and sees all the hardware on your machine and then goes to the Microsoft servers and gets the driver. And because Microsoft Windows is so dominant, you know, every PC runs Windows, it pretty much has every driver. But remember, you know, there's lots of different things. And maybe that HP this is what my guess is, HP, if it's an older machine, never made a driver for Windows 10. So HP probably has a Windows 98 driver, Windows XP driver, maybe even a Windows Vista driver, maybe even a Windows 8 driver, but it doesn't have a Windows 10 driver. So Microsoft's update won't go out and get it because it says, well, this isn't rated to work with Windows 10. Doesn't mean it won't work. Just means they didn't put it on there. Since you're on Windows 10, you need a Windows 10 driver for your touchpad. So the first place to go is a manufacturer. That's, again, who writes these drivers. So you go to HP.com. They have a, if you actually go directly to HP.com, they have a link that says drivers. Look for that particular laptop model and see if they have drivers for it. Now, sometimes it doesn't say trackpad driver. Sometimes it says just, you know, motherboard drivers. It might say a lot of different things. Almost always, your trackpad is a Synaptics, and I don't know with HP, but I'm pretty sure they use Synaptics. Everybody else does. That's the manufacturer of these trackpads. So if HP doesn't have a driver that works, and again, you might have to use the Windows 8 driver if they don't have a Windows 10 driver, that's probably okay. It's not going to break anything, but it might make that trackpad work again. So that's what happens. You when you changed operating systems, yeah, it used to work with whatever operating system you were running. When you changed operating systems, you needed to reinstall drivers built for that operating system. And in one case, it sounds like there wasn't one. If you can't find it from HP, then you might try Synaptics. One way to figure out if you have a Synaptics trackpad is to go into what we call the device manager. Easiest way to do that, press and hold the Windows key and X. And then you'll see in the pop-up menu there something called Device Manager. You can just tap M to launch it. And in there you'll see all the different hardware devices that are installed on your machine. Probably anything that's not working will have an X. It's broke. It's not working. I don't have, all that means I don't have a driver. I don't have a working driver for it. So look to see where the X's are. I think the trackpad will come in under Human Interface Devices, HIDs. And I'm looking at my Lenovo, and under the Human Interface Devices, there is, in fact, a Synaptics HID-compliant touchpad device. That's called the trackpad. So if you have a Synaptics, it'll show that because it does it questions all the hardware, but it will have an X across it or an exclamation mark on it. It'll have something indicating this thing isn't running. And it's, you know, so if that's the case, then you know you have Synaptics. You can try getting it from HP first. If that doesn't work, try getting it from Synaptics. But that's what you need. You need a driver. And in most cases, even though Windows wouldn't install it, it should, a Windows 8 driver, maybe even a Windows 7 driver, should work. You just have to find it. Windows didn't go out and get it on its own, in other words. That's pretty common. The driver model changed over time, but sometimes older drivers work just fine. I would get the most recent one you could, obviously. And if there is no driver for Windows 10, if there's some reason that, you know, HP or Synaptics never made a driver for Windows 10 for that particular piece of hardware, you're out of luck. You can use a mouse, though. Just plug it in, and you'll be stuck with that. But I don't think you will be out of luck. Synaptics is so widely used. I don't have my HP here, so I can't tell you if HP uses it, but everybody else does. I would be surprised if they didn't have a Windows 10 compatible version, even if it wasn't labeled that way. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. And we're going to take a break. Come back with our travel guru, I think, unless he's on the road. I never know with Johnny Jett. But if he's here, we'll be talking to him next. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Let me remind you, the website is techguylabs.com. There's always, after the fact, lots of chit-chat in the chat room, which we capture. And so sometimes the answer evolves through the chat, thank the help of the chat and through other callers. So all of that will always end up on the website, and that's free. You don't have to sign up for that. TechGuyLabs.com. Johnny Jett is not here. He is speaking at, I forgot, he told me last week at the San Diego Travel Show, right as we talk. So I hope if you're lucky enough to be down there, I hope you're there, in which case you're not hearing this. So forget I mentioned it. But he will join us next week at this time. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. That's another way you can talk back. You can always call in and say, hey, how? What about this? Larry, Culver City, California. Hey, Larry.
Hello. I had a computer that finally went dead on me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I went to Costco and bought the special. It's a Dell XPS.
Yeah, those are nice.
Yeah, and
I'm a big fan, actually. I love the XPS.
Yeah. I'm not having any problems with the computer. It's getting files from the old computer. I can't turn it on.
You can't turn it on?
No. It won't boot up.
Can you open it up and take the old drive out?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. I went online and read about something about a docking station
The easiest way to do this, if you're not going to keep that drive and continue to use it, which you probably shouldn't. If it won't boot, that sounds like maybe the drive's starting to fail anyway. But if you just want to inexpensively attach it to the Dell, which is a laptop, you can't put it in the laptop, obviously.
This is a desktop.
Oh, XPS desktop. Oh, all right. So you could, one way to do this simply enough, if you can open up the desktop, is take out the old computer, take out the drive, and put it in the desktop. But as somebody told you, you can get also a USB enclosure for it. But the cheapest way to go is with a little, they call it the Swiss Army knife of drive connectivity. It's $40, $45 from Neuertech, neuertech.com. They call it their USB universal drive adapter. And one of the reasons, if you think N-E-W-E-R, newer, tech, T-E-C-H. And the thing about this is if every tech guy has one of these or ought to have one of these, if you ever work with drives, because it's just so hideously useful and it's so affordable. But remember, it's not intended for long-term use because the drive is going to be out in the open. It's going to be exposed. But what it has is it has a USB cable on it, a power cable on it, and then it has a variety of connectors on either side designed to attach pretty much any kind of hard drive you might have, including laptop drives, desktop drives, SATA, IDE. It's kind of a universal doohickey that will plug into the drive, power it if it needs to be powered, and then make it a USB drive. So you can then open it on your new computer, on your XPS, and copy whatever you want, as long as that drive is still functional. Of course, if the drive isn't functional anymore, none of this will work. But at least it will let you know. You know, it depends on why the machine stopped booting. If it stopped booting just because, the boot sector was flaky or the operating system was messed up, then you still should be able to see your data. And this doohickey will let you do that. It's a nice, I think it's a very nice device. Go ahead.
It's
Neuertech.com. It's right on the front page there. They call it their USB universal drive adapter, $45. Again, I wouldn't leave the drive out on the open desktops for years or days or even hours. I mean, the idea is connect it up, copy the stuff off, then disconnect it.
And then is there any transfer software?
You don't need anything. What will happen when you plug it in via the USB port, if it's functioning, is it'll show up on the desktop as a USB drive, and you just open it and see what's on there and copy what you can. And at that point, you know, if you wanted to, you could try running something like SpinRite on it to try to save it. But, drives are so cheap now, I don't think it's worth saving it. I think the real thing is spend $45 for this adapter. You'll use it again if you ever work with hard drives. And even if you don't, $45 will get you all the, you know, if the data is accessible. That's the big question mark, right?
Yeah.
We don't know what shape that drive's in.
Yeah. Okay.
I like this thing. I tell everybody to get one of these and just, if you work with drives, have it in your toolkit.
I got one other quick comment.
Sure.
You talked earlier about going to buy a copy of Microsoft Home and Student.
Yeah.
And again, I went to Costco and bought that. When I tried to install it, somehow I got referred to some third-party idiot that wanted access to my computer.
Oh, dear. Yeah, no, don't do that.
No. And so I called Microsoft.
Yeah.
And they put it in for me.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I found Microsoft and Dell to be very, very easy to deal with.
I agree with you. And of course, you paid, what, about $150 for that home version?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the advantage of the subscription. Microsoft eventually is going to move everybody, even Windows users, to a subscription model. That's their plan. Has been for more than 10 years. They're finally getting there. The advantage of that is you get automatic updates. You get a bunch of storage. You can, if you buy the $100 a year version, you can put it on up to 6 computers. So for me, that's the obvious choice for me. Your version can only be installed on one computer at a time. You have to deactivate it and activate it somewhere else. With 6 computers, I could put it on a Mac, a PC, my office computer, my laptop, and still have a couple more. So I think that's a pretty good deal. But yeah, if this is, I'm going to use this word, antiquarian. I don't know if that's the right word. I need to come up with maybe a less mean sounding word, but I think increasingly computers have been around long enough, 30 years, almost 40 years, personal computers have been around. There are lots of us have a notion about how it should be. And one of those notions is, you know, you go to the store, you buy software in a box, you come home and you install it. That is not how it works these days. That's like the vinyl. That's like going out and buying a record. Yeah, there are people who do it and like it. I'm not saying anything against them. But nowadays, companies want you to download software and oftentimes subscribe to it. That's where Adobe's going. That's where Microsoft's going. And if you think about it, you know, it's not mere greed. It sounds like greed. It's really a more reasonable setup for them because their expenses continue. You know, their one-shot purchase doesn't cover support. Doesn't cover continued improvements, doesn't cover updates, you know, so they have to price it at a point where they pay for all of that and they have to kind of guess ahead of time. Whereas if they do a subscription, you know, they get a steady $8 a month, but that kind of subsidizes continued work on the product. So we want them to continue to work. You know, the other way to go is what Intuit did with Quicken, which I think really hurt Quicken, which is they pretended there was a new version every year. They didn't charge you a subscription. No, you buy it outright. But every year there's a new version. That's a subscription, folks, by a different name. And I think costs more and is more annoying. And that's why there's so many people running Quicken 2007, like our earlier caller, because they refuse to do it. But what happens is it stops working. I like the subscription. I know people don't like it. You're going to see subscriptions for routers, too. Plume's already doing that. You pay a monthly or yearly fee for your router, for your hardware. But it kind of makes sense if you expect them to keep it up to date and fix security holes and give you new features all the time. It makes sense. In some ways, I'm still an antiquarian. I admit it. I like fountain pens. 8888, ask Leo. We'll take more calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A little reminder from Big Pee-wee that time keeps on slipping. I better get those ads in, right, Pee-wee? Leo Laporte. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88-88-88-88. Oh, no, that's too many. 88-88-ASK-LEO, the phone number. Caleb, Newport Beach, California. Hello, Caleb.
Hey, Leo. How's it going today?
It's going great. How are you?
I am doing absolutely fantastic. I want to say thank you for having me on the show and then just for doing all these podcasts. I mean, I listen to them.
Oh, thank you for listening. Yeah.
I started listening about 4 months ago.
Oh, you just discovered. Every day now. Oh, nice.
Yes, sir. And I love it.
I hope you make it a habit.
I do. I mean, I started a WordPress blog from listening to you guys.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
TWIT. Thank you very much.
TWIT, T-W-I-T, This Week in Tech is our podcast network, and it's at twit.tv. This show's part of that network, but there's, a dozen other shows that we do as well. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I
appreciate it. Thank you, Caleb.
Of course. I just had a quick question for you.
Yeah.
I recently left Apple's walled garden, and I switched to Google. I got a Pixel phone, Pixel book.
How is life out there, the fresh air, with the where everything is beautiful and the trees and the leaves? How is that out there?
It's absolutely amazing. I love it. People on my work make fun of me all the time because they're all Apple people, and I'm the only one that doesn't use it.
Well, you know how it is. When you're in the walled garden, you look out, all that freedom scares you.
Very true. So my question for you is, I replaced everything except for a tablet. I had an iPad Mini 4 is what I had, and I loved it. I used to teach. I'm a teacher part-time, a pastor part-time.
Nice.
And, so I use a tablet to put all my lessons and sermons and everything on.
So you use it to, instead of paper, you use it to read your sermons, things like that?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm looking for something along the lines of the Android, and that would run, that I'd be able to hold in my hand, not like a big iPad, or a Pixel book's a little bulky for that.
Yeah, because I would say in some cases a Chromebook would be a better choice, because you can put some, but not all, but some of the Android apps on most new Chromebooks. Plus you get Chrome OS, you get a real browser. You get a real keyboard and all that. But you want something as lightweight as, what, a 9.7-inch iPad?
I'm looking more at a mini. Like, I was looking I was looking more at Huawei's M5.
Yeah, Huawei's stuff is very good. Android, I'll tell you this, though, up front, so you know. Android tablet is not as good as iPad. The Android apps really are not... They're not as well-tuned to that big screen real estate as I'd like to see. It's a bit of a disappointment. And I don't know why that is, except I guess the success of the iPad has kind of pushed people in that direction. So while there are very good, I mean, hardware-wise, very good tablets out there. Samsung also makes excellent ones. I think Huawei does. Huawei is, of course, currently a little bit under a shadow. And
a little bit.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this. It's getting clear with all the prosecutions. Huawei, one of the Huawei representative security guy has been prosecuted as a spy in Poland. Another Huawei executive arrested for spying in Canada. The U.S. government has said don't use Huawei gear in mission-critical businesses. There's two fears with Huawei. First of all, it's not only a Chinese firm, but it was founded by a former member of the Chinese military. And it seems to be a lot of suspicion on Huawei for really having very close ties to the Chinese government. And there are two goals the Chinese government would have that I don't think impact normal users. One is industrial espionage. And so a lot of companies are reluctant to use Huawei gear in their businesses because they're not sure that the data they expose to the Huawei gear will not end up in Chinese government hands. So if you're inventing the next generation television, you might say, I ain't using Huawei gear. Good luck finding anything not made in China, incidentally. The other concern, there's actually three. The other concern is a concern of cyber warfare. And I'm sad to say that in the next 10 years, the future of wars, in some ways this is not bad. The futures of wars is not going to a foreign land with a gun and killing people, but it is attacking over the internet and critical resources like, for instance, the power grid in the United States. And we've seen this. We've seen foreign actors literally infiltrate our grid. Not doing anything, but the fear is, well, they're just sitting there waiting. And when warfare breaks out, the first thing they do is they cut our power. And that would be devastating. And interestingly, gives nations that don't have the wherewithal to invade, they don't have rockets to launch missiles, you know, atomic bombs, but smaller countries that do have hackers, the ability to attack within our shores. So I believe in the next 10 years we're going to see that. And that's one of the reasons the government says don't use Huawei gear. Why put potential adversaries' equipment in our national infrastructure? So that, I guess, makes sense. Neither of those is a concern for you. You're not worried about them stealing your secrets for your big invention or about, you know, taking your sermons off the air as part of cyber warfare. So I wouldn't worry about that. There is a third concern. Again, I don't think it concerns you. It's pretty clear that the Chinese government also does things like, we believe, for instance, the Yahoo breach as an effort to keep an eye on Chinese citizens both in China and abroad and perhaps figure out what espionage agents are working for the U.S. and other countries. So Those are the three. Those are the concerns, and those three all have to do with nation states fighting one another or industrial espionage. Not, in other words, I have a Huawei phone. They're amazing. They're really good. I have a Huawei laptop. It's really good. I wouldn't have any problem with a Huawei tablet. And by the way, the other companies that I would recommend, Samsung's Korea. Okay, maybe South Korea is an ally, so maybe that's not so bad. And they are made in Korea, so maybe that would be a better choice if you wanted to, you know, support the government's anti-China initiative. Acer, though, is from Taiwan. Again, an ally, probably okay. So that's up to you. I don't have a problem with Huawei gear. I don't think as an individual there's anything to worry about.
Perfect.
And I think that mate is very, very nice. They make great gear. That's why this is hard.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah, they make really good hardware. In fact, one of the reasons Apple has been suffering in China with iPhone sales is because there are a handful of Chinese manufacturers, Huawei, but ZTE and Xiaomi, that make better phones for half the price. So why would you be nuts if you're in China? You don't care. It's patriotic to buy a Chinese-made phone.
Yeah, it's true.
That's why they're not buying iPhones. Anyway, yes, I recommend it.
Perfect. Thank you, Leo. Appreciate your time,
man. My pleasure. Yep. And if you decide you want to, you know, run the grid, the national grid, don't use that. I think Samsungs are very good, and Acers are very good, and those are two companies that do not manufacture in mainland China, and they are allies. Countries are allies of the United States. Yeah, I'm serious, though, about this this issue of cyber war. I think this is the future of warfare. It's too dangerous, honestly, these days with nuclear weapons to start a shooting war. It's also hideously expensive. What country is going to invade our shores in the United States? What country is going to send 1 million troops? Even China doesn't want to do that. What would you gain that would make up for the immense cost of that? Nothing. On the other hand, getting a handful of hackers together, subverting elections, shutting off the grid, those things are cheap and easy. That's the future of warfare in the United States. Maybe instead of building a wall in the southern border, we should build a beautiful firewall. But there's a risk to doing that, too. I mean, this is the risk China has. They do have the great firewall of China, but when you cut yourself off from the rest of the world, there are downsides to that, too. It's complicated. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call free, but you'll have to use a voice over the internet program that will let you make calls to landlines. Skype out, for instance. 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website which is available to all and sundry at no cost, no sign up, no charge. All you have to do is go to techguylabs.com. And I mention that because I know as a lot of you are driving around getting your chores done and so forth, and you hear something and you go, oh, you don't have to write it down. You don't. We're writing it all down for you, and it's available 24/7 at techguylabs.com at no charge. So anytime you hear something and you want to remember it, yeah, just remember techguylabs.com. And incidentally, there's also a comment section there. And if you want to enhance or quibble or completely deny anything I've said, you can go there and do that. techguylabs.com. No charge. Roger, Chula Vista, California is next. Hello, Roger. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I've listened so long, you'd think I'd be smarter, you know?
Oh, man, I'm getting dumber as I go, so no, it doesn't work that way. That's life.
Yeah.
The more you know, the less you know. Isn't that the case? The more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
That's true. true.
It's an endless process.
And you get dumber with age. I'm up there.
But you get wiser as you get dumber.
Yeah, that's
it's a true, conundrum. What can I do for you?
Well, I need the ability to post and share photos among an exclusive group.
Yes.
I'm on my, we're 75 years old, and I'm on the reunion committee, and we've had many reunions, obviously. And some of the people want the ability to post pictures and look at them.
Yeah.
You know, either go look at pictures or post pictures.
What you want is what we call a shared album that will let anybody with permission, that's critical, upload images as well as look at the images. And that's right. A great thing for any event, because a wedding, a bar mitzvah, a college reunion, because, you have many people there with cameras. And so it's a great idea. I love that. And there are a lot of ways to do that. Some of it's dependent on the group of people. If you knew everybody was on Facebook, for instance, it'd be possible to create an invitation-only Facebook group for that event that not only would have pictures but could also have text and all sorts of stuff. But for that to work, everybody has to be a Facebook member.
These people aren't, a lot of them.
Yeah, and I'm not either. I don't blame them.
I don't trust them.
Yeah, I would be mad if somebody said, you have to be a member of Facebook to see this. I would say, no, I'm happily not. I don't trust him. We know you can't trust Facebook. That's a given. Anybody who thinks they can, you're crazy. So now you may or may not trust Google, but Google also offers such a thing with their Google Photos at photos.google.com. You can create an invitation-only album, that's what Google calls them, for pictures.
Oh, okay.
And almost everybody has a Google account because Gmail. So, and I think people are maybe a little less leery of putting pictures on Google than they are on putting them on Facebook. So that's another one. But there are other companies that will do this, sometimes free, sometimes not. Yahoo. I use a company I love for photography, but it's not free, called SmugMug. They actually own Flickr, which is another choice. Flickr, I think, will let you do this for free, a private group. And SmugMug absolutely will do this. In fact, this is how a lot of professional photographers, let's say you shoot a wedding, you don't want anybody but the bride and the bride's relatives to see the photos, so you create an album for the bride's purposes. You give it a password and you share that password with the bride, and then she has access to it. There's also sites that I would probably prefer, like Shutterstock. Shutterstock will let you do this. And the nice thing about Shutterstock is if people want prints, it's just a click away. Because Shutterstock is free. Its business is selling prints. So they love this because, of course, a lot of people say, I would like a print of that shot. The drawback to Shutterstock is they have to create an account. And a lot of people don't have Shutterstock accounts. But it is free.
Right. That's one of the problems. These people are 75. Some of them don't do computers well at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that I can ask them to go and create or download a special program.
Do you think they'll have it's all on the web. Everything we're talking about is on the web, which means they can use iPads, they can use their phones. Everything I've mentioned here is a web-based album, so no program necessary. But in almost every case, you need an account. So in that case, I would say,
not unreasonable. Like, if we give instructions to these people on how to create their account, it'll probably be okay.
I believe, and I may be wrong, correct me, chat room, if I'm wrong, but I believe Google Photos allows you to view photos without a Google account. It would only be if they wanted to upload photos, they would have to create an account. And, of course, if somebody's sophisticated enough to have taken a picture and saying, I want to share it with the group, they'll have a Google account.
Right, right.
So I would say photos.google.com, you can, what you will do is you will share with the group. There's two ways to do it. You can make it password protected. There's three ways to do it. You can make it invite only, which is what I would suggest. That requires that everybody has to have an email, but you can send an email to the, I bet you have a group.
Right.
You have a group list, right?
Oh, yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
So you can send an email to the group list saying, here's the link to the site. And it's such a long, crazy link that nobody's going to guess it. It's got many, many characters. So that might be the easiest. But if you really want to keep it more private, you can make it invitation only and say, here's all the, I'm going to invite all the people. They'll get an email from Google saying, hey, somebody's just shared a photo album with you. To join it, click this link. And only they will get access to it. That's the most secure.
We're thinking.
Yeah, photos.google.com. It's called a shared album. They will have to have a Google account to upload to it, but they will not have to have a Google account to view it.
Okay.
Doesn't that sound good?
It does. I've looked, you know, I quickly looked at, you know, a Flickr, which I guess became SmugMug, and, you know, and Dropbox and Facebook, and they all seem to have pluses and minuses.
Yeah, they do.
That, and a password isn't out of discussion. That would be okay if the people had to have a password.
I would look at a shared album on Google Photos that is invitation only. Then you send out an invitation to everybody via their email address. They click that link and they're in. No one else with any other address can get in any other way. You don't need a password, which does simplify it. I know when I've used passwords, sometimes, especially with family members who aren't tech savvy, there's confusion. But So just invite them. Send them an email. They have email. Send them an email. They can use their iPads. They can use their tablets. They can use their phones, and they can see the pictures. And if they're sophisticated enough to take them, they can upload them.
Oh, that would be great. And they can always print them on their own computer.
Google has printing capability as well. Like. Yeah, Google. In fact, one additional feature, you can get a photo book printed and send that to the people. If they don't have anybody doesn't have a computer, you can send them a photo book from that album. Google does do prints as well. Yeah.
I don't know the total variation of these people's talents.
No, that's the way it is always. But I think this is, and I've tried a lot of ways of doing this. This is the one I like the best. But again, you know, sometimes people don't even trust Google. And I understand, believe me. I'm not sure I trust Google. But I trust Google no less than I trust the rest of the internet. So if you're going to use an internet sharing service, Google's no worse than anybody else. That's not high praise, but it's accurate. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this word. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mm-hmm. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number on the line. From Brentwood, California, it's Rick. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Leo, you're amazing. You ever do presentations or luncheons or speaking engagements?
I used to, yeah. You're looking for somebody to speak to your organization?
Yeah, I am. And somebody, because guys like me that are just past the millennials, we have no idea what's going on. I'm so confused.
I've done a lot of talks to that group.
Oh, my God. I need you. Like even my question, my main question right now is I'm so confused. You know, I'm moving into a condo that I own that I used to rent, and I don't want to go with Verizon, the bundle package. I don't want to go with Spectrum. I want to know how I can get high speed, and I'm a photographer. I'm more interested in upload than I am in download and watching Netflix.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How can I get, I mean, you know, the options are, I guess, satellite internet or cable internet.
Well, you're kind of in the boat of most of the country. About 80% of the country has only two choices, phone or cable, for their internet. And I guess you could include a satellite in there, although I generally don't recommend satellite unless you have no other choice, because you have to buy a lot of gear. It's expensive. And satellite has some real downsides. Remember, all your data has to go up to the bird and then back down and then back up to the bird and then back down. And that means you got a lot of what they call latency. And that's kind of not ideal for a lot of uses. So because you want a lot of upload speed.
I use Photo Shelter from your previous caller, which is solves.
That's for sharing?
Situation.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that.
What I do is it's a pay site and they have different levels. And I'll do something, but you give a password, and people can look and download, or you can, you know, a lot of people that are pros nice. Use that and they can charge, but you can also make it free for everybody. But anyway,
very nice. That looks a little like Smug Mug, same kind of idea, and I think that's a lot of people use Smug Mug in the same way. Yeah, it's kind of a portfolio site for pros.
Yeah,
it looks good.
Am I stuck? So am I stuck with either
Apple
or phone?
Here's what the options are to you. You're not, maybe not stuck. If you've already talked to the cable, one of the questions for the cable company is ask them about business class service.
Ah, okay. Now,
it'll be more expensive, but you are using it for business. The advantage of business class service is, at least from Comcast, I don't know about Spectrum, but I bet it's the same, is there's no bandwidth caps. And they generally have what's called an SLA, a service level agreement. They have a commitment to you to have a certain speed. Consumer internet, when they give you numbers, you know, 100 down, 10 up, that's best case scenario. And it's not necessarily guaranteed. In fact, it's definitely not guaranteed. It's different in business. They guarantee a certain level, and often the upstreams are faster. So you can even inquire. There is available probably at an even greater cost something called symmetric internet, which is as fast up as it is down, but that's pretty pricey. I would talk to your cable provider and see what they offer in business class service. That's right, number one.
I'm using DSL right now because back in the day, I had it trunked in. I had a line.
Yeah, but now you're getting it over the twisted pair phone lines in that condo. And depending on how far you are from the central office, DSL degrades by distance rapidly. It also, I think, is rarely as fast as cable because it's those two pairs that were designed for voice. So the good thing about DSL is you don't have to get it from the incumbent local carrier. You don't have to get it from Verizon. You can get it because the FCC mandates that the phone companies allow other internet service providers to offer service on those lines that they own. So you may find other companies if you search around for DSL. I would go to DSLreports.com or broadbandreports.com as it used to be known. Actually, it's known now as Broadband Reports. Broadbandreports.com has a zip code search. And then reviews from real customers. Actually, am I doing this wrong? Let me. I type broad reports. That's a whole different thing. Broadbandreports.com. And they have a speed test checker, but in there you'll see reviews and happy customers, and you'll get an idea of what to expect in your particular neighborhood. In addition, a list of other DSL providers there. So it looks like they call it DSLreports.com now. So that's a independent and very good journalistically integrity site that you can trust. There are a lot of sites that pretend to be journalistic and, in fact, are paid advertising. So be careful. DSLreports.com is trustworthy. The other choice that may exist out there is fiber. You are in a metro. So, in fact, Brentwood's a pretty upscale community, so you might be able to, and this is really going to depend on the condo. So a lot of times a way you get service in an apartment building or a condo is the association contracts with a provider. I don't know if your condo association has anything like that, but that'd
we're
be worth
it. We're all old-timers in one of the old buildings.
Oh, they don't care.
I think we're all using 3x5 cards.
a lot of times, though, internet service providers will come to apartment buildings and say, look, we'd like exclusive, and you'll wire every apartment, and we'll offer a deal, and et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes worth looking at. If you're in a techie area like in San Francisco, sometimes you get better internet service that way than you would get from the phone company or the cable company. So I don't know if they've done that, but it might be worth checking. Finally, there are sometimes, especially in metro areas, microwave solutions. They're called wireless internet solution providers, but because you're in a metro, because microwave needs to be line of sight, but it's often used in business, and that can be very fast. Less reliable if there's weather or a tree gets in the way, but because you do need line of sight. Or a bird flies by. I think you probably should consider business class service from Spectrum. I would bet you be your best option if you don't mind paying. I have business class service from Comcast in my home because I have a home office, and I think it's $100 a month, but it's rock solid, $119 down, $20 up. And 20 up should be enough for you, I would guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls still to come. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ow! 8888 Ask Leo, the Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, our gizmo wizard coming up. But first, Janine in Santa Barbara. Hello, Janine.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great, and thank you for taking my call.
It's my pleasure. I'm sorry about what happened in between during the commercials. You should know no one should ever have to hear that.
Oh, okay.
What can I do?
I'm not sure.
When people don't know, maybe, but when you're on hold on the show, you hear everything that's going on in the studio, even the stuff that doesn't go out over the air.
I loved it. Well, sometimes that's the most fun.
I think so. What goes on during the commercials should stay in the commercials. Right. Yes. What can I do for you?
Okay, well, what I'm calling about is my daughter has a Samsung J3, which she just purchased. And she is desperately trying to find a way to retrieve all of her text messages. And I was wondering if there's a way to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So there's a number of ways to do it.
Okay.
Sometimes with a new phone, depends on your carrier, the old messages will still be there. But if she doesn't see them now, you won't ever see them. So you're probably going to want to use a transfer app. Truthfully, she could do it at the phone store. When you buy that new phone, you could say, please transfer all my data over. And they have a machine that'll do it.
Well, I thought that was only the phone call, the messages on.
It's on the messages, phone. It's the text messages, it's whatever's on there. Really? If you want music, whatever. Did she buy? Where'd she get the phone?
At a Verizon.
Oh yeah. Go back into the Verizon store and say, "Hey, I forgot to do this." Does she have the old phone still?
Uh huh.
Yeah, I forgot to do this. Could you transfer this over? They may say they can't, but most of the time they can. I know they can. It's just whether they want to.
And that would include the text messages.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, but verify that with them and so forth. If not, there are absolutely ways to do it. Does she have a computer?
Yes.
Okay, so there are a number of programs that will do this. In fact, I guess she doesn't really need a computer. There are Android programs that will do this. The one that I'm most familiar with is called SMS Backup and Restore. And SMS are the text messages, short message service. And it's an app she'd put on the old phone. She downloaded it from the Play Store. It's I believe it's free. I have it on my phone. I don't think I paid for it. And it will back up all the messages to the cloud, to their cloud. And then you put it on the new phone and you restore them.
Mm.
And bada bing, bada boom.
I'll be darned. So that seems simple enough.
It's very simple. Yeah.
It seems to me she asked for that kind of assistance and she hasn't been.
Usually when you buy a new phone at a company store like Verizon, they will even offer, would you like to transfer the old data over? But maybe now in today's world where people are worried about, privacy and all that, maybe they don't do that anymore. So this will do it for you. SMS Backup and Restore. It's from SyncTech. And it's on the Play Store. But there are, if she goes to that, she'll see a bunch of similar apps. There's a lot of apps that'll do this. It's not a hard thing to do.
Now, is that an app she has to purchase?
Well, I'm not sure because I own it. So I'm not, but it's not expensive. If she does, it'll be a couple of bucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's great.
Yeah. And it was the old phone a Samsung?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think Samsung even has a Samsung Smart Switch app that will do that. But
really?
Yeah. Charum's saying, actually, SMS Backup and Restore doesn't back up to their cloud. It backs up to your cloud, so it could be Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever you've got, which actually is better. That preserves your privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this will be a good choice. Just tell her SMS Backup and Restore from SyncTech. And it's on the Play Store, so she just goes into her, you know, apps store and downloads it.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much. I love your program.
Thank you, Janine.
And that's been very helpful.
Well, my pleasure. That's what I'm here for. That's why I make the big bucks. Right? Jim in Escondido, California is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you today?
Well, I've got a couple old Toshiba laptops that I had for, you know, quite a few years. And both of them more or less just died on me. They just kind of ran out of power, and I thought it was a charging issue. So I tried to charge them a couple of times, and I just can't seem to recharge them. And even prior to that, I had a HP desktop that, mainly I do a little bit of internet on there, maybe store some pictures, things like that. But now that I can't get them started, I'm wondering about what my options would be. One option I thought about was just to recycle them, you know, to one of those recycling, right, electronic recycling events. But I was wondering about, if I were to do that, what about the data or pictures, things like that, that are on the hard drives of those devices?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first thing, just real quickly, as a parenthetical thought, on laptops, sometimes if on that laptop it's old enough that you can remove the battery, with it plugged in, and oftentimes it'll work. The batteries only have a certain lifespan. Once they're dead, you either have to replace them, or on some older laptops, you could just take them out. Modern laptops, everything's glued in. But
right,
on the older laptops, you could just... most Toshibas, yeah, you could just take it out. There's a little switch, you take it out. And it should work just fine. It's bypassing the battery.
So take the battery out and then plug it in with the...
Yeah, see if it works.
Okay.
And then if it does, then you could order a new battery if you really wanted to save it. But your question is... who cares? Your question's a good one. It really depends. Yeah. You're absolutely great for saying, I'm going to bring it to an e-waste recycler. You can't throw laptops in the trash. You can't throw batteries in the trash. You can't throw paint, oil. You know, there's just certain things that have to be properly handled. And any electronics have to be sent to an e-waste provider. Sometimes your trash company will do that for you. But everywhere in your area has e-waste recycling centers. California is very good about that. But you ask a really great question. What about the data on the drive? And
right.
That data is still there, even if your computer won't work.
Right.
So I think in most cases, an e-waste recycling center, they're not going to go through this stuff, pull out the drive, put it in a new computer, and see what's on there. But they don't make any promise that they won't do that. I'm sure it's fine. But ideally, if there were anything on there you were worried about somebody getting, like credit card numbers, bank accounts, logins, passwords, it'd be a good idea to wipe that. Or take the hard drive out.
Yeah.
If you can open it up and take the hard drive out, donate or recycle the rest.
Right.
And just keep that hard drive. Now, you're going to have a pile of hard drives at some point.
Right. So to do that, you just take the back off the...
Yeah, most laptops have screws, and you can just loosen the screws, and there it is, and you pull it out.
Yep. What about the desktop? Where would the desktop...
So desktop tower cases also have screws in the back, usually a side panel you can remove, and that's even easier. You'll see the drive right there connected to some ribbon cables to the motherboard. Disconnect the cable. The drive will be in there via screws. Loosen the screws, remove the drive. Everything else can be donated. If you wanted to erase the contents of the drive, you could put them, if you really want to go crazy, on a bootable computer and use a variety of tools. I like DBAN, D-B-A-N, Derek's Boot and Nuke, and you can wipe it. Or you can do what the Army does. You can open it up, grind the drives to dust, and then nobody will be able to get it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Maybe drill holes in them. Hit the drive with a hammer. Or just store it forever in your closet, right? That's a really good question. I think people don't ever think about it, frankly. And absolutely, this stuff, you know, still contains data. And the answer to this for going forward, and I should say this on the air, but I'm not saying it on there. I'm saying it on the podcast, is, and anyway, you should do this anyway, always, always encrypt your drives. So when you get a new computer, if it's a Mac, turn on File Vault. Unfortunately, with Windows, you have to have the pro version to use BitLocker. I beg of you, Microsoft, make BitLocker available across the board because everybody needs this. This is especially true of solid-state drives because there's no real way to guarantee erase a solid-state drive. If you turn on encryption before you do anything private, the drive is unusable no matter who gets it if they don't have the unlock code. It's just gobbledygook. So everything, phone, hard drives, laptop, the first thing I do before I set up a computer, I turn on a full drive encryption because then I don't have to worry about it. The data is just not visible. Sometimes you want your data to be protected. That's when you should call Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business. Customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. If you use one provider for server backup, but they don't do endpoint, then you got to use another provider for endpoint protection. But then they don't do, you know, protect critical systems. You need a third provider. That's too complicated. You need, and I think most companies realize this, more companies are moving to this than ever before, a single vendor solution. One company for all your data protection needs. May I submit for your approval, Carbonite, the best. They offer scalable, secure server backup solutions, very flexible deployment models, flexible recovery options. They will talk to them and they'll provide you a solution that's right for your business no matter what. Some of the options, real-time replication and cloud failover, that's for disaster recovery and high availability. If not everybody wants that, but if you are in a business where it's important you get back up and running fast, that could be critical. They, of course, offer backup and recovery for physical drives, but also virtual machines, cloud-based environments. They support over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms. Very compatible. They also offer enterprise-grade endpoint protection. Now, if you've got laptops or phones out there in the real world and it's not end-to-end block-level encrypted, your data is just floating out there. They also have true global deduplication. They're the only company that can do this. They have the patent on it for endpoint protection. Bandwidth management tools that'll minimize network disruption. That you can even say, don't back up on battery, you know, all of that stuff. And ultimately, the most important thing, remote wipe capabilities, because if a phone or laptop goes missing, and they always do, you can wipe them. So your data is safe. Combine various Carbonite technologies to build yourself a comprehensive single-vendor solution for your workloads, your risk tolerance, your business objectives. That's what it's all about. It'll simplify your environment, eliminate gaps in your data protection, reduce costly redundancies, and man, they are the secure, trusted provider with award-winning customer service 7 days a week. I've been begging you, please, go find out more about Carbonite's data protection platform for business at Carbonite.com. C-A-R-B-O-N-I-T-E, Carbonite.com. Everybody, got to get down tonight. I love the disco, and so does Dickie D. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and our own personal gizmo wizard. That's what we call him. The Gizwiz. He's going to get down tonight. Get down tonight. How many times have you danced to this song, Dickie D?
555.
I bet.
Yeah, I have my tablet with me all the time, and I...
See, in those days, they didn't have smartwatches. You could have had your watch keep track of all of that.
Exactly.
Dick is a gadget hound and has been for many, many years. He comes by it honestly, and thank goodness, because he keeps us up to date on the latest stuff. What's out there? What do you got for
us? Well, you know, Leo, at CES, I saw a gadget that you not only know about.
Yes.
You helped make famous.
What?
And the company knows you.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Now I'm worried.
Generation 2 of the June oven.
Oh, I love my June oven.
Okay. So I went and I said, wait a minute. I know someone who owns this. Do you know the name Leo Laporte? And the guy said, what are you kidding? He talked about this when it first came out.
Stacey Higginbotham on our Twig show told me about it. She was a big fan. She talked me into buying a $1,500 toaster oven. But it is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. But Leo, the new one, well, first of all, I said, what does the new one do that Leo doesn't? And he said, well, we added two things, but Leo's oven already does it because we sent the software upgrade to him. Or if it doesn't, they add stir fried.
Oh, stir fry. How do you stir fry in a toaster oven?
I have no idea. How about dehydration?
Ooh.
Okay.
I'm a little dehydrated right now. Let me
stick your head in the oven.
Yeah.
But the thing
is it's cheaper.
Yeah, Leo, it's $5.99.
That hurts.
That hurts. I know. But
really,
you know,
I wish you'd asked them the question, what does Leo's oven do that this one doesn't? What does he pay $1,000 more for? Would be the right question.
I'm sorry about that.
No, it's all right. I'm an early adopter. That's what I get.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
But why? Even $600 is a lot for a toaster oven. Why should somebody buy this toaster
oven? Well, it has a built-in camera, and the guy had a tray of asparagus there, and he said, you slide that
it's
in.
It's really cool. You put an English muffin in there, and it says, it's an English muffin. You want me to toast it? I said,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. He slid in the asparagus, and a picture of asparagus and green beans came up. Yeah. And the guy said to me, listen, 99% of the time, the oven knows what it is.
It has a fetish for toaster strudel.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, almost anything I put in, it says, it's either a piece of pizza or toaster strudel. Which is it? I don't know why. It likes strudel. I don't know.
You know what? I'm going to tell them to send you the new software with the more intelligent camera.
It's pretty
cool.
I actually really like it.
Yeah, so you can broil and roast and air fry and dehydrate now and slow cook and reheat.
It has recipes built in.
From the table.
Yeah. Yeah, it has recipes built in. It also has, which is really cool, and I don't know if the new one does, it knows how much whatever you put in weighs. It's got little scales in the feet.
Yeah, you know, I did not ask about that.
You may not have that. It also has a probe.
To take your temperature?
Not for you. For the chicken.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I worried the guy when he talked about the camera. I sucked my head in. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to take a selfie.
Yeah.
He said, no, not for that.
You know what's funny, though, is you can go and watch in the June Oven app on your phone your food cook. And I can look at previous meals and watch time lapse of the meal cooking. I did this on the air, and somebody was making toast at my house. And I said, what the hell? Who's in my house making toast?
That is – well, you know what? I guess the thing is if a steak was done the way you really loved it, you could look at the picture of what it looked like.
Good. Yeah.
And then say, I'm going to wait till my new picture matches this one. And
it's kind of a geeky, you know. But I like it.
Oh, you know what? When you were talking about it, the chat room was going, what, how much? But then when you started talking about walking around with your phone and seeing what's in the oven, that was pretty neat. Yeah.
Plays a nice little song when food's done.
Oh, I asked for a disco option. They said it's not coming.
Eat a little food. Cook a little fun. Get down tonight. It would be good. It'd be good.
It would have been great. Yeah. Sit down tonight. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
It's a Wi-Fi enabled oven. It's funny because it's Android. I know because I rebooted it once and the Android pops up. So it's an Android. It's like a little Android smartphone and plus an oven. It's really cool.
Yeah. So if you're interested, it's down to $5.99, and they have a deluxe version where you get like some extra cookware and I think a 3-year warranty. But that raises it to $7.99.
When you mention my name, do they say, "Oh yeah, that sucker"? I mean,
No. They were very pleased with you. They said, "Do we know him? He helped get this company going."
Oh, good. I'm glad.
So there. Yeah. So it was not been in vain for nothing.
We cook with it all the time. It's like a second oven in the house.
No, I think it's great. Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. Now, if you want to know more about it, Dick has a video. He's got a link to the website. He's got his own little personal review at his website, gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz, While you're there, right next to the June oven, you might notice a picture of a befuddled Dick DiBartolo with the words, "What the heck is it?" That's his "What the heck is it?" contest, where he's got a close-up picture of, I think it looks like an inflatable nose, but I don't know why you would want that. I'm not sure what it is, but
you know, Clown College is a big call for them.
He's giving away 18 autographed copies of Mad Magazine, up to 6 for the right answer, 12 for the best wrong answers. So all you got to do, and you have a little time, it goes through the end of the month, February. So go to gizwiz.biz, figure out what it's a close-up of a gadget or something. Is that a one-note ocarina?
Forbidden by law to give
it's the world-famous nose flute. I don't know what it is. But if you do, or if you think you come up with a clever answer better than mine, gizwiz.biz, that's also where you'll find Dick's great podcast, The GizWiz Show with Chad Johnson, gizwiz.tv is the direct link, and other stuff. It's a fun site. All the other products and gadgets he mentions. You doing World News Now soon?
Yeah, tomorrow night.
You're going to do CES gadgets for him?
I'm doing gadgets you may not have seen at CES. I am.
That's fun. Overnight, ABC News, World News Now. Dick's a regular over there, and he's a regular over here.
Yes, I all love right. both.
Put your dancing shoes back on, and you can dance on out of here. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
For those of you watching Bye. On the live stream, Dick will be back in minutes. Don't even hang up, Dick. There's no point.
Okay.
Because he does the afternoon giz fizz. It's like dialing for dollars without any dollars.
And no dialing.
And it's no perfect. Dialing. It's a show.
It's a show.
It's a show. On our live stream at twit.tv/live right after the radio show ends. Thank you, Dickie D. Thanks to our musical director, Big P-Way Damien. You rock. Having a lot of fun with Damien today on the show. Thanks to our phone angel, Ms. Kim Schaffer, for answering your calls. Thanks most of all to you, whether you call or just listen. I couldn't do it without you. So thank you for being here. I'll be back next time, and I hope you will too. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.